Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Nigel was the first one to get there, and Nigel was obsessed with this one concrete gannet, and he would groom her and be, you know, he was like, oh, this is my girlfriend right here.
Right.
Obviously,
I'm going to make situation.
You my girlfriend.
Exactly. Yeah. But the feelings never reciprocated, unfortunately.
Well, of course not, because the other one is made of concrete.
Exactly.
Yes.
One was an inanimate object.
Only
one
slightly
was
more emotive than my wife, apparently.
Booyah!
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And welcome to the slowest day of the year, except for tomorrow, because at least today we can look back on the Super Bowl, and by tomorrow, we're not going to be able to do that. We're chatter, but we're closed. I mean, we're here, but we're closed for renovation. We're closed for renovation tomorrow. We're opening Thursday morning at 7 in the morning, open for breakfast, and we will do the show. David Aldridge is here. Tori Clark is here. Michael Kornheiser, free at last from jury duty, is here. Nigel's here to run the board. Bill Isaacson, who comes by often, just came by today, even though nobody else is here.
he's my new legal counsel.
Yes, and I'm going to. By the way, for the sponsors who've been complaining that I haven't done the reads, and you've gotten very personal. Well, we're paying him. The last 3 weeks, I had no voice whatsoever. I came in here like a trooper to try and do the show. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry that I didn't do your reads, but your reads were handled more than adequately by Michael and by Nigel. And I will start to do them again. But you know what? If I lose my voice, I'm sorry. I'm not going to do them.
Are you going to name names?
Apparently, Nigel said everybody. Every single sponsor that we had. And I felt that your reads are much better than mine. By the way, I chipped in on every single read.
They're also not paying for this open, so feel free to crush them.
I think that's a great motto. More than adequate.
From Dave Kroll, not Dave Grohl.
Not Dave Grohl?
No, not him.
Dave Kroll from Syracuse. With the upcoming Oscars and the newest members being elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame, I thought you and the gang might get a kick out of these bottles of hot sauce I sent to Chatter. Because you like the movie I, Tonya so much, I sent you a bottle of Tonya's hot sauce, Pete Rose hot sauce, Bill Gates, which is called the Gates of Hell hot sauce. These are friends of mine and have a shop in Syracuse that sold hot sauces, and when they closed the shop, had a few cases. So we have hot sauces. Michael, I'm not a hot sauce person.
Huge hot sauce fan.
Well, then you'll take one on the way out. It'll be a gift. It'll be a gift, right? I'm not this guy. From Dan Rokusek in Chicago, this is a Tac Life lighter. What is this?
It's a lighter.
Is this like the atomic lighter?
I don't think anything is like the atomic lighter, to be honest with you. Can we open it?
It's very nice. You open it. Go ahead.
It seems like a smaller version of your flashlight that you liked last year.
We've got from Peter Jennings, a Tokyo American Club hat, a very nice hat.
Yes.
Here's a sign. Here's a letter. Dear Dr. Grandpa, I and the woman I'm related to by engagement were in town from Connecticut for the weekend. We bought you some tiki torches.
Oh, yes.
I wondered how the tiki torches got here and were not sent directly to Charlottesville. And they were here, which I can light with my atomic lighter or my Tac Life lighter. So
it could keep us warm.
We bought you tiki torches so you'd stop griping about having nothing to light with your tactical atomic lighter. And you refuse to acknowledge that these things are pretty perfectly flammable. So we were sent those.
Can we just stop there for a second that these lovely people,
Sean and Tialik from Prospect.
Sean and Tialik, somewhere in Washington, D.C., over the weekend, found tiki torches.
Exactly.
And this time of year, not easy to find, I'm guessing.
Yeah, because not a lot of outdoor activity.
And then they hop on the metro.
Bill inspecting them to see if they are exact replicas from Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm. By the way, here, the lighter is, in fact, very much like the atomic lighter.
Fantastic.
It has lightning technology. It looks more like a cattle prod.
And you need that sometimes.
Sometimes
when you're in a rough
that.
Situation.
So, yes, I think you could stick this in the grill and light it like, you know.
Toby Robinson and Ann Slemmer say, Dear Dr. Mr. Tony Bootsy's Grandpa and Gang, this invite comes to you from the woman I'm soon to be related to by marriage, asking several times who and why are we inviting him while preparing the invitation list. I hope that Nigel's allegiance to Denison won't prevent this letter from being read, as my alma mater, Heidelberg University, regularly meets up with the Big Red in D3 athletics and wins. You would have knocked that down?
Yeah, never graduated.
So it's Ann and Toby. It's March 3rd. It's at the Heidelberg University campus. We will all sign this thing, the invitation. We got candy?
Yeah, that is a box full of stuff.
A box
full. As the letter explains.
Mm-hmm. Where's the letter? Is the letter? Just a big box of stuff?
Yes, it's a very long letter.
Wow, it is from Graham Hansen in Amos, Nebraska. Dear Tony and crew, I'm sending you a big box of stuff. It's just, you know, do I have to read the whole letter? Because it's a very long letter.
I don't think so.
I throw, you know, it's very nice. It's lederhosen, it's candy.
Yeah, there's some gloves in there.
Very specific stuff for blizzards. And we're very grateful to Grant Hansen for all of these things.
By the way, this is more from Peter Jennings in Japan. These are shirts.
He sends shirts, he sends ties. These are great giveaways. This is
the T.Y. Harbor Brewery, which is located in Tokyo. And for some reason, and we love them, we got lots of shirts from there.
Good. We have...
as well as... Golf balls.
We got, and golf balls are great. We always golf balls are always great. This is from Tony Beeson. Tony Beeson, who actually has a license plate, and he's from Cincinnati, actually has a license plate. I have a piano. IHVAPNO. That's his license
pretty
plate. Because Gary said that somebody sent it to him. He sent me, he sent ice cream, which is very good. Is this another wedding? Megan McCrum and Michael Joseph Girardi, Joe Girardi, February 3rd. So that was at St. Peter's in town. So congratulations to them and their marriage. Who sent us these? These are fabulous.
I'm not sure.
These are just beautiful
inspirational pictures.
Things. The Metro one is a picture of a Metro train catching on fire completely, and it says progress. Fewer Metro fires this year. That is great.
That's from
true. And there's a picture of piano. Tragic irony. I have a piano, but I don't know how to play, and I have no talent. So that's for Tony B. We should have given these.
Put these
up. Those will go up in the restaurant somewhere. And one more thing, and then I will stop this and get into the actual show.
All right.
A cigar. I'm sorry, Dave. David reading his mail.
I'm just seeing into
really
the future where the show devolves completely into just reading.
This is the Brazabout show.
Is this what I missed
the
last week?
This is from Greg Pelletier in Charlton, Massachusetts. I'd like to introduce you to the littlest little, Lily Jane, my second child. Proud alumni of UMass Lowell. Oh, God, they beat us. And while our basketball team may not be up to the level of University of Vermont, our hockey team is often nationally ranked and made it to D1 Final Four. Wow, D1 Final Four as recently as 2013. Oh. Enclosed, you'll find a cigar in honor of the latest addition to the family. Now you can see if your atomic lighter is really up to snuff. So that's my family owned a restaurant for 35 years before selling it. It was attached to a bowling alley that my family also owned. The bowling alley actually made money. Might I recommend adding a bowling alley onto Chad? You can tack it onto the men's bathroom renovation. Kill two birds with one stone. By the way, and that renovation is going on now. So that's why we're not on, you know, not fully open with everybody. All right. Review of the Super Bowl. Because I was with the world's angriest man yesterday who said that he hated the game because there was no defense. I thought the game was thrilling and fabulously entertaining. And I thought at any given point, either team could score. And I mean, I thought the thing that was the worst for the Patriots was they could not get the other team off the field on third down and fourth down. Mm-hmm. I mean, the combination of Peterson, whose work I was totally unfamiliar with, and Nick Foles, who in the last two games has been
spectacular,
just unbelievable. Nick Foles had such confidence when he got up to the line. Third and fourth downs. It was a revelation.
I cannot think of, and maybe you can. You've been doing this longer than I have. Can you think of a guy that had a bigger and more dramatic turnaround within a week of getting on the field or being on the field?
Well, his first turnaround was when he had the really good year for the Eagles.
Right, right, right.
And then was a chaos, and it couldn't do anything.
And then was just a guy. He was just a guy. Right?
He was a third backup.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's startling. I couldn't think of one. I've been trying to think of somebody.
Jeff Hostetler. But Jeff Hostetler was more established and was not as spectacular.
Right. No.
Was not.
No,
it was good.
Of, yeah.
Just, they won.
This guy was great.
Right.
He was great.
Nick Foles was great. And by the way, the lines in the three playoff games, they were the underdog, but by smaller margins each week, as people said, wow, they're pretty good. The news story out of the Super Bowl to me is the catches.
Yeah.
Because if you watched, you heard Chris Collinsworth say with complete validity, given the current rule, Those are not catches.
And if you followed the Twittersphere as that was going on, everyone and the many, many people out there who hate the Patriots were saying, okay, that'll get sent back. That'll get turned back, right? Of course it will. And they didn't. And then you're kind of in stunned amazement.
What did you think of that?
I don't know whether or not they should have been overruled or not, but the game was incredible. And I'm sitting there watching it thinking, this is the first time in years actually watching the game was fun, right? The games can often be boring. And
game
this
was
is
great.
A really fun game. And I became more and more entranced with the story of the Eagles quarterback. And it's a really good game. You weren't dying waiting for the commercials, which you sometimes are, right? So that was pretty cool. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking to yourself, and a friend, Paula, tweeted me 70, 75 times, and her tweets increasingly got less and less, you know, comprehensible as the game went on.
How much drinking was involved?
I said, yes, but don't forget, because she was getting very excited, going, God, the Eagles will pull this off. I said, don't get excited. This is Tom Brady and the Patriots.
When it went
don't
to 33-32.
But still, I'm watching it going, but that's okay. They'll probably win in the end, but this is a good game.
Yeah.
Then you get into the third quarter, and still you're going, yeah, this is great. This is amazing. But the trick play is great. All of those things.
Yes.
But, and even when there's a minute left, you still say.
Sure.
That's right, because
he's
Tom
Brady.
Because
he's
Tom Brady. Only a curmudgeon like Wilbon could say it's a bad game.
That was a good game.
I mean, only
fun
he
game.
Could.
It's a fun game.
I felt about the catches, I was okay with it. And by the way, I would have been okay with it if the Patriots made those catches. Mm. I was okay with it because I think within the last week, and I don't know how you feel about this, Roger Goodell came out and said, we've got to change this rule. And I wonder if the people in New York, when they're making the ultimate call, that's in the back of their head, and they're saying, you know what, these look like catches.
Well, maybe, maybe. I thought NBC had a terrible game.
Did you?
They were terrible. I thought Al and Chris, they missed. They were wrong, and they were loud wrong on those catches.
Yes, Chris said
but
both times.
But all of you were thinking the exact same thing
at
home.
No, actually, I wasn't.
I thought the Ertz catch was legit.
That was because he made a football move.
He ran
three steps. Everybody says you have to do.
And then he crossed the play.
Yeah, so that was.
And by the way, when the ball popped up, he caught the ball.
And that wasn't especially hard to see him make a football move. That's why I was like, why are you staying on this?
But the first one, the Clement one.
There was a little movement there. And
yeah.
You could have seen
it. And his foot was out before he.
Yeah, right.
Before he pulled it in.
Yes. You could have seen
Tori
that.
Tori has her hand.
When David's done. Are you done?
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Were there fewer flags thrown than for a long time?
There were
in the
not
Super Bowl?
A lot of penalties.
Not a lot of penalties?
No.
One punt.
There was
one punt.
A well-played game.
That's
that
great.
Regard, yeah.
By the way, if the XFL wants to speed the game along, watch that game.
Yeah.
Watch that game. Go for it on fourth.
Well, look at the timing. With the XFL announcement, you have a game where they're bowing to the pressure of the fans, which is be reasonable with what is a catch and what is not a catch.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that message was clear in the broadcast. And you have a game that looked like a college playoff, you know, overtime, where they're literally spotted the ball inside the 50 every time.
Right.
And if you don't score a touchdown, you're losing.
Right. Giant, if you turned your head, a 20-yard play went on.
Yeah.
It just went on. So to me, that is a fabulously satisfying thing. And for those people who say, well, what about, is this the end of the Patriots? The quarterback just went for 500 yards.
No picks, three touchdowns.
Yeah.
Right. And I could not believe, to finish the point, that they didn't have an official there, a ref guy there, like everybody does every week. Where was Pereira, or whatever your equivalent of Pereira was?
They don't have one. NBC doesn't have that.
You've got to have one for the Super Bowl just because stuff like that happens.
Yeah. Okay, the mom point, the cutest thing after the game when they're doing all the trophy and this thing, right? And Nick Foles is up there and he's holding his baby.
Lily, is that her name, Lily?
Lily.
Lots of,
Lily von Stupp,
of mom.
Yeah.
Lots of moms. She had the cute little earmuffs on.
Yeah.
Lots of moms were texting Minnesota. One another going, that's not the first time he's held that baby. That baby was so happy to be with him in the midst of all that chaos, really happy, completely comfortable, completely relaxed. So all these moms are texting one another going, oh, in addition to being a great quarterback, he's clearly a wonderful dad.
I think you had to feel good for that whole event.
That was fun.
And I miss the NFL now.
Did you, Tori, I don't mean to break your bubble here. That was actually an actor.
Exactly.
Yes,
tiny actor.
It was Daniel Day-Lewis, which is very gifted.
I really thought it was a good game.
It was a great game.
Did you see Kevin Hart get knocked?
Yes.
I learned about this yesterday. And by the way, because of movies and, you know, and you don't really know. He's really tiny.
He's really tiny.
Oh yeah, he's a short guy.
So I'm watching Daryl Green. What is Daryl Green thinking?
Thinking sad. Give it to the Eagles.
I gotta give this to the Eagles. Really?
Sad.
You make me do this.
Hashtag sad.
So he's walking, and they're all touching the trophy. And I get it. It's kind of cool. I like that, actually, as they walk their spoils through the... And then he walks past the big guy, the big security guy. And I turn to Diane, and I say... He's not letting anybody up on that podium.
Kevin Hart comes up to his waist.
I didn't even see Kevin Hart until an hour later when it went viral.
What I said on PTI yesterday was, if he'd only been with The Rock could have thrown him onto the podium. Stay with The Rock,
Kevin.
Did you
see when he dropped the F-bomb? When he got up on the seat?
He has later said Network. He was overserved.
In the moment, he said he was overserved. Yeah. And they're all trying to save him, and he just kept going. And finally, somebody essentially picks him up.
Yeah, pick him up, drop him somewhere else. All right, let's get out of here. We're going to come back with Jason Lockenfora. We're going to wrap the thing up one more time. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, I'm going to do a read. I'm going to try and do a read here because I respect the sponsors.
Process. Trust
Blue Apron is the leading meal kit delivery service in the United States. And while many people know what we do, many people don't know about the types of meals you eat when you cook with Blue Apron, like strip steaks with potatoes and spicy maple collard greens, a steakhouse-inspired favorite with a delicious twist, chili-infused maple syrup, with incredible ingredients and chef-designed recipes. Blue Apron lets you see what the power of food can do. Blue Apron delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door that can be cooked in under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. Blue Apron offers 12 new recipes each week, and customers can pick 2, 3, or 4 recipes, depending on what fits their schedule. Blue Apron sends only non-GMO ingredients and meat with no added hormones. They want to hear what we love to cook and eat. Last few weeks, I've been pretty sick, so I haven't cooked and I haven't eaten much as well. So I'm a little off my game on this. I know the people at Blue Apron will understand because nobody praises Blue Apron on reads more than I do.
You love
Blue Apron.
Because
I've done it, and I like it.
Yes. Right?
Blue Apron is treating the Tony Kornheiser podcast listeners to $30 off your first order if you visit blueapron.com/TonyK. So check out this week's menu. Get your $30 off at blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Wake up and wipe my eyes. I gotta get up, I don't know why. I don't wanna leave you now, but I'm giving it all for you, my baby.
Coffee, this is Haroon Rashid from Halifax, England. This is called Beautiful Day. Okay. He doesn't sound like he's from England.
No.
This is really great. Not that if he sounded like he was from England, it would be bad. Because the Beatles were from England. But this is lovely.
I feel like the people.
We played this before?
Yes, we have played this a couple of times. I feel like the people from Folgers should be calling Haroon right
now.
There
you go.
Really this good. Would be the jingle for them. Mm-hmm.
Really, really good.
Good.
My favorite guest on the show, and I say this not to denigrate anybody else on the show because I love everybody on the
guests.
Show. Jason Lockenfora, week after week after week.
Number one.
Goes deep. He goes deep. This is the last time I'm going to talk to Jason for a while, which makes me sad, of course. But let's review. We spent the first, segment of the show talking about the Super Bowl, which everybody in here thought was really great fun. Mm-hmm. You look at it, I'm sure, in a different way because you're working and you're working in real time. What did you think of the game?
Yeah, I mean, we're sitting there, in the fourth quarter, and I'm with my boy Prisco, and I think this was his 30th Super Bowl that he's covered. And so immediately, the chatter starts like, oh, well, where does this one rank, because that's what we do now. Right? Everything is like, we want to conceptualize it and put it into context before it even happens, right, because the game's still going on. And he's like, I don't know, it's up there. And I'm like, yeah, I like a little bit of defense sprinkled in my Super Bowl. I want like a flake or two, a kernel or two. I mean, one punt, no real stops. You had the fluky interception. I mean, when the Patriots broke up the two-point conversion in the fourth quarter, that was really as close as they came to making a stop all day. And it was significant because you're like, Brady's going to come back and win this thing.
Right.
But it was also just a two-point conversion. I mean, somebody who gets paid to play defense, make a play. Just one. And then Brandon Graham did, and that was more or less lights out. I mean, it was a compelling game. It was a fairly enthralling game. It was, the whole pinball thing. I mean, if that thing goes overtime, Brady's going to throw for 600 yards. I mean, so there was a lot going on. Three different Patriots receivers getting 100 yards. Nick Foles, continuing to play fair. I won't say perfect, but you know, he sailed a few balls. I mean, we can pick nits with him, but playing at an exceptionally high level, it was a spectacle. You know, I maybe frame it that way.
Okay.
To me, the New England Seattle game, I think, was better. The New England Atlanta game, I think, overall was better because they actually pulled that comeback off from 28-3 or whatever. But this, look, this was no slouch of a game.
What did the Eagles do with Nick Foles? I mean, Carson Wentz, you don't know if he's injury prone and you don't know how he's going to come back, but the trajectory of Carson Wentz is bright star. He's your guy. What do you do with Nick Foles?
I mean, Howie Roseman, their general manager, is anything but a shrinking violet. In a league where a lot of guys are scared of their own shadow and don't like to make trades, you know, they'd rather just sign a guy, but, oh, boy, I got to give up assets and bring a guy in and then maybe sign that guy too. Ooh, I don't know. He that's what he does. And so let's go back to asset management. Nick Foles was a guy that, you know, they got off the street with limited competition. Carson Wentz is a guy. Remember, they traded up twice. They made two blockbuster trades to move from like the 20s up to two or three. Second overall to get him. They don't have a second and a third round pick, which are, you know, that's your lifeblood. Young, cheap assets, 10-year starters who you get for nothing the first 5 years. They don't have either of those this year. And Foles played to a level that I think you probably could get a day two draft pick for him, a second or a third round pick. So that's where I think it's heading. And then maybe you sign it. You sign a Josh McCown. You sign, you know, a top backup to fill that role. But you recoup one of those picks where you may get a young pass rusher. You may get, you know, a young receiver to complement Alshon Jeffrey if Torrey Smith moves on. Like I think he probably will. So that's what I think, Tone. But the injury complicates things, and the timing of the injury complicates things. But even with all that, I think they can go and get a fine veteran complimentary backup and try to sell high on Foles.
Can I tell you that I thought the breakout star of the Super Bowl was Doug Peterson? I am utterly unfamiliar with Doug Peterson. Tell us how he got to that spot.
Look, I didn't know that he'd be this good this fast. He played in the league for a long time.
He held a clipboard for a long time.
Yeah, but he was a sponge, and he absorbed a lot of offensive ideas. He spent a lot of time with Andy Reid as a player, spent a lot of time with Andy Reid as a coach, did not spend much time calling plays, but he was a guy that the Eagles really latched in on that search a few years back. You know, people were linking them with Hugh Jackson and a few other guys, but you know, they still knew there's still enough relationships with Andy Reid there. And even though that thing didn't end on a perfect note, nothing does. He was there for a long time. The owner knows him well. The GM knows him well. Peterson was his guy, and they were going to draft a quarterback, and they felt like we were going to get a quarterback guy to work with him.
Right.
And what I don't know that anybody knew was that he was going to be this sort of master class assassin play caller, where what you saw Sunday was not somebody reinventing themselves or somebody trying to live up to the moment or somebody saying, well, because it's Belichick and Brady, I need to steal a possession here or steal a possession there or try to do this or try to do that. He's been going for the throat pretty much all season. Now, they curbed it a little bit for a week or two when Foles came in and looked like he wasn't up for it, and they had to dial some things back, and you know, they kind of really massaged their way through that Atlanta game. But you saw what, you know, you saw in Minnesota again, swashbuckling. We're going to take multiple shots 50 yards down the field.
You know the word that Bill Raftery uses? Onions.
Onions.
No. I mean, that fourth and one.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Ballsy call. No two ways about it.
Yes.
You know, now look, did he have to go for two as early as he did? No. And did that set him up to chase points later? Yeah, but that call to Foles, you know, some of the play calls on third and long, you know, the decision to go for it on the fourth down.
Yeah.
Those were all vital points in that ball game, and he outwitted Belichick.
That was a Patriots
that
play.
That 30-minute halftime is usually when Belichick stomps you out, right? He steps on your neck and breaks you in the second half. It didn't happen. He and Patricia still had no answers in the second half. They could not get a stop. One stop, and they probably win the game.
Couldn't get him off the field. Let us get to the, if there is an overarching story. It's the touchdown catches. It's the ruling from New York, which seemed far more liberal than we have seen in recent months and years, and maybe even against the letter of the law as we understand it. What are your thoughts about that, and can you explain why you think that happened?
Look, I think they let them play a little bit in general. This was the year to throw it up for grabs and get a PI call, right? That wasn't going on. They let some things go in that regard. You didn't see a preponderance of defensive holding or PI calls.
No.
Think about how many times the ball was in the air.
Right.
I mean, New England's running backs only ran it 19 times. Philadelphia didn't run it much in the second half either. It was bombs away, and they were letting them play. And I think in terms of the rulings on catch, not a catch, and the Ertz play, I mean, I think they let common sense dictate a little bit more. I think that was their way of saying, and look, I spent some time with Rich McKay during the week. There's no doubt that things are going to change. That competition committee knows that they're going to be doing hundreds of hours of film review and doing whatever they can to try to take some layers of this onion out and make it, I guess, a little bit more of a real-time eye test and not a measure of how fast these cameras are getting and the lens speeds and all that, because that's not really what this is about. And they feel like it's the officials are doing it pretty well on the field. It's the when replay comes in and we've got these, you know, flash frame nanosecond glimpses of the ball barely moving, that's where they feel like they've gone probably a bridge too far. And the Super Bowl, I think they did kind of let the field and the eye be more of the judge, and that's where this is going. How exactly that looks in a rule book, that's why those guys are going to be hanging out in Florida for, you know, the better part of a month trying to figure it out.
All right, the Patriots, I think it's premature to say it's the beginning of the end of the Patriots. You had a 40-year-old quarterback who threw for 500-plus and had no interceptions. What more do you really want? But do you think it's the beginning of the end for the Patriots?
No, I mean, none of these teams are the same. Like, I went back and looked at the leading receiver every year that Tom Brady's been there. Rishay Caldwell was their leading receiver 10 years ago in a season in which, you know, they contended for a Super Bowl. I mean, David Givens, David Patton, Troy Brown.
Yeah.
This is what they do. You know, the principles will be there. I mean, McDaniels and Patricia, significant losses, but you know, Bill Belichick is not going to be crying in his cornflakes. He had those guys for a long time together, and the roster's changed. I mean, people forget this was Antoine Smith, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. You know, then it was Corey Dillon. Then it morphed into the 3 years where they had Randy Moss, and you had multiple 1,000-yard receivers. And then the team reinvented itself again. Then it was the two tight ends with Gronk and Hernandez, and then Hernandez goes to jail. And, well, what are we going to do now? Let's force feed Edelman. I mean,
and LeGarrette Blount. Let's put him in the game.
They're going to win 10, 11, 12 games next year. They're going to win that division.
Right.
And as long as Brady and Belichick are there, they just hold people to a standard. There's just this assumption of greatness that I think makes not great rosters turn out to be playing in significant games all the time. Philadelphia is the more talented team. Like, just erase position groups and take those two rosters and write down the 20 most talented players in that game. I don't know that you're getting to beyond six for the Patriots. You know, I really don't think you are. So, I mean, that's who they are, and this is who they'll continue to be. And Brady's got 2 years left on his deal, and maybe Belichick sits down with Kraft and does an extension after this year, or maybe he just plays it out for one more year. But no, I don't think they could win the Super Bowl next year.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know how anybody could sit here and opine and say it's over, you know, because somebody wrote a 7,000-word treatise that, you know, I still don't know. I mean, you could go read that today. I don't really know how much there was, but that's just me.
Tori, I think Brian was just here and he just walked out. I just in the middle of an interview. Brian may have left something for us.
Oh, he didn't know they weren't open.
Yeah, but he can.
And he loves the omelets here.
Oh.
He actually comes to the omelets,
text him and say that he could
come sit with us.
Come
sit, okay. Yes.
All right, let me get. This is what's so great about the show. In the middle of the show, I have to tell Tori that her husband was here.
Yeah.
Jason, can I move far afield and ask you what in God's name the Redskins are thinking about if they want to once again apply a franchise tag to Kirk Cousins? What is this?
It's, you know, Bruce gonna Bruce. I don't know, man. You know, this could never just end.
Right.
Casually, comfortably, normally.
We wish him well.
That's just not the Redskins way, right? I mean, it's funny. Like, I had people telling me, like, in the Hall of Fame room, like, I was like, well, you know, there's been a change there in the D.C. voter, and, you know, how was Larry Michael? They're like, ooh, he really doesn't like Kirk Cousins. I'm like, what the hell does that have to do with anything? Like, that's what's going on. Like, I mean, you know, everybody's running around now smearing Kirk Cousins. I don't think they can franchise him. I don't. I mean, could they? Sure. What happens? Well, immediately the NFLPA files a grievance and says that's not. Go read the CBA. That this is, you know, that's not the intent of a franchise tag. His agent calls every team in the league and says, and remember, these are the same guys who represented Lyle Collins. I don't know if you remember that situation with the Cowboys, where, you know, there was things about maybe this kid was involved in some sort of nefarious off-field behavior when he was going in the draft, and they wanted him to be a free agent, didn't want him to be drafted in the seventh round. They called all the teams, said, we're not going to sign, worked out to their favor. They would call every team and say, we're not doing an extension, just wait a year. We're gonna make our $35 million this year,
right,
and then we'll be a UFA next year because they can't franchise us again.
Right.
They'll be able to scuttle any trade by not doing an extension. Who's gonna trade for Cousins if you can't do a long term deal?
Right.
And at some point he may sign that thing, and then the Skins not only have him counting against the cap, but they actually have to pay him that money. Now,
insane.
They string it out into the spring. You know, this is so stupid that we're even talking. But like, could they string him out until like July and then pull the tag if he still hasn't signed it? Yeah, but somebody will still pay him.
Right.
So even then, you're making it a little more difficult for him. You're putting him deep into the market where teams have spent most of their big money already in free agency. But you can't kill his net value. You know, he's not going to go out and rob a bank tomorrow. You know, there's like he's just going to sit there and wait to get paid. It's asinine that they're even mulling this, but they are mulling it. And, you know, I talked to people from other teams who were like, I had the weirdest conversation with Bruce last night. I'm like, let me guess. It's ridiculous.
All right.
It is ridiculous. I believe at the end of the day, when they run this through their models or whatever they do there, or you know, they smoke their stogies and talk it through, at some point someone would say, boy, we're really not going to gain anything here. And the player will still be able to dictate the situation because of his ability to sign or not sign that tag, or to negotiate or not negotiate a long-term deal with another team. He wants to pick his own team, and they seem to not want to let that happen. But that's free agency!
Right. Thank you, Jason. Plug your podcast for us. Let's hear the dog.
I don't know what exactly we're going to do on the BMO show this week. We're coming off some hot runs here, man. We had the Ray Lewis. We had the Ben Watson. We had your boy D.A. We might be going here we go. Hon, didn't have you in a hotel room last week, Chopper. We might talk to Rod Woodson this week, Hall of Fame Raven, about his time with Ray Lewis, and we'll be transitioning to baseball soon enough. Check us out on the iTunes there.
So
be more opinionated podcast, hon. I'm going to go walk this dog.
Give our best to the dog. Thank you, Jason. Jason Lockenfora, boys and girls.
And his dog.
We'll come back with news and Nigel. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Now, I'm going to try one more read today, see how it works out. This is Casper read. I have Casper. So speaking of dogs, speaking of the fact that Copper was barking.
Yes.
Jesse sleeps on a Casper mattress.
There you go.
And
so
loves
it's fit
Casper
for
mattress.
A dog.
Absolutely. Fit for people, too. But fit for dogs as well. You've heard me talk about Casper products for some time now. That's because Casper makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest at affordable prices. You spend one-third of your life sleeping, you should be comfortable. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. I guess you want to sink a little and,
bounce
a lot. Their breathable design helps you sleep cool, regulates your body temperature throughout the night. Am I the only person, by the way, even in the middle of the winter, that in the middle of the night gets up and opens the window?
No.
My father does that. I open the window. Yeah. You think only old people do that?
I'm just telling you, that's my experience. My father does it.
I do it. Casper isn't only a mattress company. They also offer a wide array of other products. It's hard to say wide array. It's like Russell Westbrook is the hardest name in sports. It's really hard. A wide array of other products like pillows and sheets to ensure an overall coughing now to ensure an overall better sleep experience. Not only getting the best sleep experience, but Casper overall purchasing experience is hassle-free. They deliver right to your door in a small, how do they do that size box, plus free shipping and returns in the United States and Canada. For listeners to this high-quality podcast, Casper is offering $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/Tony using the promo code Tony at checkout. The only way to get $50 towards select mattresses is by going to casper.com/Tony and using promo code Tony at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Nate Beauvais, who is creating music on a variety of bass guitars. He writes, here's a music thing I created with my computer and a few of my bass guitars. It's not really a song. I guess it's a jingle. Been a tough week at my house. Although I live in New England, I've been a Patriots fan since high school. The woman I'm related to by marriage is an Eagles fan. It's been a battle to win over our five-year-old son. Told me the other day if the Patriots money line gets to 180, he's all in. Next year will be my 10th year listening to the podcast, thanks to you and the gang for all the years of laughs. Michael, if people want to send in music of any stripe that's entertaining, how do they do it?
Please send your original music into the show jingles at TonyKornheiserShow.com.
And are we selling anything?
Yes, we still have some new shirts and some new hats coming in to shop.TonyKornheiserShow.com. And a personal message to Rob Kolpian and his family. Rob manages the TK shop, and he lost his mother yesterday, so I just wanted to share that all of our thoughts are with him
our
and his family.
Our sympathies, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. This is news. I just want to get ahead of myself. I'm going to do the first news story because it involves David. And so this is a back and forth with David.
Go ahead.
David is going to, as David always does when I bring up John Wall in any negative light, David tells me I'm an idiot.
So you are.
So I'm just going to go through this now. The Wizards won again last night.
They did.
They're 5-0.
On the road, right?
5-0 without John Wall. I'm not saying you have to react, but surely, David, surely something is going on here. They had 29 assists on 45 baskets. They had eight guys in double figures. Mm-hmm. Bradley Beal, who is the other most important player on the team, mm-hmm. is quoted widely as saying, this is really good. The way we're playing now is really good. Mm-hmm. I am not saying to hand the ball to Tomas Satoransky, although he had six assists last night, as did Frazier. Well. I'm not saying to hand the ball to him and trade John Wall. I'm not saying that.
Sure
actually,
are.
I would say
sure
that.
Sure you are. For sure.
I am
Just
saying
say what
that.
You mean.
But what I wonder about is they're so much better than I thought they would be in this circumstance. Mm-hmm. Is there a lesson here for the coach, Scott Brooks, for John Wall, for the rest of the team? Because something is going on.
Is there a lesson? Sure. Is it always better to pass the ball than to shoot it? Most of the time, yes. But once again, people who, this is a Rorschach, whatever you think of John Wall, you're going to project onto this win streak. It proves John Wall's selfish and John Wall shouldn't shoot as much, which is just preposterous. He's one of the 15 best players in the league. It's like saying, well, Russell Westbrook shouldn't have the ball so much. We should move the ball. We should let Josh Huestis shoot it more. Really? No, you shouldn't. You should let John Wall make decisions because he's second in the league in assists for a reason because he's really good at it. And he passes the ball. He's not selfish. He moves the ball. Now, without him, how do you win games?
Yeah.
Do you win games by letting Bradley Beal shoot 30 times? I mean, you could try it that way.
Yeah, I don't think that would work.
No, it wouldn't. So how do you win? By everybody scoring, by moving the ball. That's the only way you can win without John Wall.
So if that makes, this is, I think, the critical question.
Ask away.
If that makes the team happy, and they seem to be happy.
Everybody's happy when
you score. And you're going to get John Wall back because he's your best player.
Mm-hmm.
Do you take John Wall aside if you're the coach and say, it's not that I want to change everything you do, but are you watching this? Can you change enough to keep this going on?
It is up to the other players, Tony. It's not up to John Wall. If you want the ball, if you want to keep eating, as everybody says, move the ball. This is not rocket science. Otto Porter was terrible. He has not been terrible the last five games. Markieff Morris was not good.
Now he's shooting threes.
Now he's shooting the ball well. This isn't hard. You want more shots? Make more shots.
Well, so do you say to John Wall, throw the pass it earlier. Pass it earlier. Run this offense. See if it works.
You could do that, I suppose. Again, I'm not going to take the ball out of the hands of a guy who is second in the league in assists and say you should make sure that Gortat touches it six times before we shoot. You could do that. You just play differently. It's not that you play. You have to play differently without your best player.
Yeah.
You have to get more people involved to make up for the fact that you don't have your best player. This isn't – I don't know why people want to make this about John Wall being selfish when he's not a selfish player.
I didn't say
if
it was
he was
selfish.
A selfish player, I would say so, but he's not.
Russell Westbrook is a selfish player.
I think Russell shoots it way more than John Wall does.
Yeah,
I'll put it that way. And I'm not saying – you know, that's just who he is, and you got to live with that if you have him because he does a lot of other stuff that helps you win. But John Wall doesn't, like, dominate the ball. He doesn't take 100 shots a game. So that's why I push back on this, because I just think people who don't like John Wall are using this as an excuse to take a shot at John Wall instead of saying, well, they have to play this way because they're down 20 points and 9 assists a game, and you've got to get more people involved if you're going to win. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm on the other side. Okay, go to news.
Yes, news. The stock market has been rather interesting in the last couple of days.
Tori, what's happening with the stock market?
My husband predicted this.
He did?
Where yes, is
did.
Your husband? Does he
come he just left
he values streets. Food and coffee more than our company. Yes. I texted him.
Brian showed up. He was in the window.
He just kept on walking. Yes,
yeah. Freedom.
I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah. I don't know where he's going to go in that direction, but I guess he drove. Yeah, he predicted this.
Well, eventually you get to Georgetown if you keep walking around.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. He's been saying for months. And I don't know if he predicted quite the dramatic
right.
fall that we had yesterday, but saying it's just a matter of time. And then he did say, as we were saying before the show, that they probably should raise interest rates, but now this is going to make the Fed go, oh, maybe we better not do this, right? But somebody should have done the split screen yesterday. President Trump was in Cincinnati, whatever, talking about how great everything was.
Well, this wasn't so great yesterday.
And the
it was
scene
a plunge.
From Wall Street was of people...
Well, they had to cut away from his speech.
but in years back, and I remember this, because I used to watch the John McLaughlin Group show. Did anybody watch that?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Did you watch
McLaughlin.
That?
All time.
And I remember in the 80s, which is 30 years ago, but not 130 years ago, they would have predictions. Oh. And one of the predictions was, finally this year, the Dow will reach 3,000. Oh. It's at 25,000. So in the old days you have a plunge like this, people are literally jumping out the window.
Sure, yeah,
but not
sure.
Now yeah, I mean, unless you got in last year,
right
but
yeah.
But not now, because it's so high.
Most people take the long-term view. Most, not mm-hmm. all, but most people take the long-term view. Don't look at your 401k today.
Right.
That will make you very sad.
Well, and you can't treat the stock market like it's the weekend in the NFL, where you're like, let me bet on these stocks, and by Monday
well,
I'll clean up.
But as you
do.
Get
well,
older, you get out of stocks because,
right.
you know, you don't have that much time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You
know,
and you don't buy green bananas.
No. I do believe Michael Farr on The Farrcast, which is a podcast broadcast right here at
yes.
the Chatter Studios.
Michael Farr, friend Michael Farr.
Yes, he has been saying for a while, there is a correction coming.
Sure.
I don't think anybody saw it sort of this dramatic
quickly.
In a couple of days, but, you know, it's the market's, you know, been way too high, and it'll level itself out, and just keep your head and keep on doing what you do.
Okay.
So there you go.
What else?
Matt Patricia is going to the Lions.
Really?
This despite the fact... That the I believe the Eagles just scored again. Right
so
now.
If you, like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, when you're the New York Giants and you introduce Pat Shurmur,
yeah.
and his team has just scored 7 points, and you go, oh, is that the guy we really want? Right. Now you're the
Lions.
Detroit Lions, yeah. and you introduce Matt Patricia, who I believe should shave the beard
yeah.
and actually not show up today. You know. Now the other question in play, and I know what Jason Lockenfora said about Belichick, but let me ask you this. If the Colts don't announce Josh McDaniels in the next 24 hours, mm-hmm. is there a part of you that wonders if Bill Belichick is coming back?
No. To the Giants?
No, Bill Belichick to the Patriots. In other words,
if
Josh McDaniels does not go,
right. Okay,
as everyone says he will, is there a part of you that says, ooh, does this mean Bill Belichick's not coming back?
I hadn't thought about that.
Interesting.
It's interesting.
I do know there's a lot of people up in New England who are still curious / furious about what happened with Malcolm Butler and why he did not
Well, what
play.
Is it?
What is the backstory?
Nobody has said.
Nobody knows.
There's some rumors that he was late to a meeting. or past curfew, that he got into it with some coaches.
Yeah, there's a lot of rumors.
That he was sick.
Yeah.
He had a bad week of practice.
But veterans have said, well, yeah, you know, you could discipline him after the game. Right. It's just sort of a big game, you know. And he didn't play at all. And
if anybody has earned the benefit of the doubt on personnel, it's Bill Belichick.
Yes, true. But he does miss from time to time. You know?
Do you think we'll ever know what it is unless Butler tells us?
He just says that
it's
they gave
the
up.
It's the Kremlin over there.
Yeah, it really is.
Did anybody else notice with Patricia? Because when I watch these games, because 2/3 of what the commentators are saying is over my head. So I just watch to see the faces on the various officials and the coaches and the assistant coaches, whatever. And every time something happened that was not good for Patricia, they'd have a camera on him, and he's just staring straight ahead. And about halfway through the game, I thought, my God, he should at least pretend to care about this. And he's scribbling something down or talking to somebody feverishly into his headset. Nope. Just staring straight ahead like, this is not my
Had
job
a great year. On. Didn't have a great game.
Yeah. No.
They couldn't get him off the field.
Neither did Belichick, though. I mean,
No.
He's the coach.
No.
Yes. So. Todd Frazier is going to the New York Mets. Hopefully he just kept the same property in New York.
There
he was with the Yankees last year, but he will be with the Mets this year. Oh, 2 years, $17 million
deal. He's a home run hitter, and he was on, and I bring this up because my son is here, and he and Todd Frazier are about the same age. Todd Frazier was on the 1998 Toms River team that won the Little League World Series.
Oh.
You played against them, did you not?
Not sure if we actually played against Toms River, though we had to with the round robin of
I think you did. I think you had to play the Jersey team.
Yeah. So we would have. We probably played them in one of the first. We actually might have played them in the second game. Mm. I think the first game was against the local Connecticut team.
Do you have any? You had no?
No recollection.
Do you have any recollection of any player in that entire tournament?
Just players of my own team.
Right.
Sam Neill held the strikeout record for about 8 to 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah. 0-5, DC Little League. In that series.
Nice unis, though.
Beautiful uniforms.
Nice unis. Great. I was happy to be there. So one kid out of that region became a big time.
I'm sure there's probably another one or two that have made it.
Yeah. The shortstop in Delaware was about 6'6".
Wow.
I mean, he was a really big kid.
The Staten Island team, they were all over 6'4".
Yeah, just really big
kids. They were
all
30.
They're big kids.
Brought their wives and kids to the game with them.
Well, they drove.
Yeah, they drove.
They drove their own bus.
Well, it was in a Little League game I played when I came over to your country, there was a guy literally shaving before the game.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what happens. What else? We have anything else?
Yeah, two quick melancholy happy trails, Mr. Tony. Dennis Edwards, who replaced David Ruffin in The Temptations.
Yeah. Dennis Edwards is a lovely singer. He was the lead on Ball of Confusion.
Right. Yeah, Cloud
and,
Nine.
And Papa was Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
That was not the Temptation sound that I favored.
I
favored the Eddie Kendricks, David Ruffin sound, the My Girl sound.
Right.
The more political songs were not, they were not for me.
Right.
And also melancholy happy trails to John Mahoney.
Consequential actor.
Yeah, most people remember him from Frasier.
Sure.
Yes.
But I remember him, the first time I saw him on screen was in a movie called Moonstruck.
Oh,
with
dropped the water professor. On him.
Yes, the wine. The woman threw the wine at him.
And he said, could you please take away your plate and remove every trace of her and bring me a tall glass of vodka?
Yes.
And then he hits on Olympia Dukakis as they sort of
wonderful actor.
Yes,
Were you surprised he was only 77?
Yes.
Because I would have guessed he was in his... well into his 80s by now.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Very recognizable.
Was a long time ago.
Where was he born? Of course, in England.
Yes.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that. No trace of an accent.
No, he lost it. He moved over here a long time ago and lost the accent.
Are we good?
We are good.
Let's get out of here, and we will come back with Old Guy Radio, in which Michael will discuss it to the degree of detail that he chooses to, what happened in his 8-day courtroom stint.
Oh,
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I guess I'm supposed to do the Sherry's Berries read now.
Well, I did too. I mean, I did the most I could.
Well, it's a little hard for me to step up to this reading performance knowing that I was so harshly criticized in my absence.
I don't think you were criticized.
Not by us. We loved you.
More than adequate.
We missed you tremendously.
You were not harshly criticized.
So again, here is the Sherry's Berries theme. Think inside the box. Make a big impression this Valentine's Day. I'm going to skip through the thought starters and go straight to the key copy points.
I think that think inside the box is a very good, that's a very very good line.
I did too.
It's the copywriter
and
is
I love
good.
Sherry's Berries.
Yeah, Sherry's Berries are fantastic.
A gift from Sherry's Berries is the perfect way to make a big impression this Valentine's Day. Go ahead and think inside the box this Valentine's Day. Your berries will arrive in Sherry's Berries signature gift box with a beautiful ribbon, no gift wrap required, and the presentation in the Sherry's Berries box is indeed beautiful.
It is
see
yeah, it's
gorgeous.
The
it chocolate
is.
Drizzled over the it berries is. They are and the way they are securely
berries.
Nestled.
They are big berries.
They're big.
Into the box.
Big
softball
berries.
Size.
Yeah, same Cassell size berries.
Yeah.
So right now, listeners of the Tony Kornheiser Show can send Sherry's Berries or any of their decadent gourmet gifts to their Valentine and save 20% on gifts over $29 with promo code TKPOD. I know they want you to think inside the box. I'm going outside the box, and you can actually share this with a group of friends if, say, you don't have one Valentine and you are getting together with a group of friends and want a reason to celebrate your independence and being single.
Yeah, so you can get Sherry's Berries.
Yes.
And hang around. Then just sit and eat them.
So these are fresh, juicy strawberries dipped in milk, dark and white chocolatey goodness, then topped with rich chocolate chips, chopped nuts, and signature swizzles. And you know when you go to the grocery store and you're in the fruit aisle and you pick up about 15 different boxes of strawberries and halfway through, you're like, I don't even know what I'm looking at anymore.
Right.
They've done that hard work for you. These are the choicest berries that you'll get. And you can choose your delivery date. It's guaranteed. Customer satisfaction is always number one. I think that's their number one priority, so
absolutely.
Forgive me if I write into the copy or your money back. Hurry and order today. Valentine's Day is next week. There's only one way to get 20% off an unforgettable gift over $29 from Sherry's Berries. Visit berries.com. Please spell out the words berries, berries.com. I guess I could have read that parenthetical to myself, but just wanted it to be
good
clear.
Job. Show sincerity on
it's
your
interior
part.
Monologue.
Berries.com today and enter promo code TKPOD at checkout. I slipped on that one because it's slightly different than other codes. That's berries.com, code TKPOD.
Good job, Michael.
Nicely articulated.
Very good job.
Way more than adequate.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. These are the Righteous Brothers. Only Bill Medley is still alive, right? Bobby Hatfield,
Bob
not
Hatfield,
alive anymore.
Yes, but Bobby Hatfield passed, yes.
This is You've Lost That Love and Feeling. This is it, this is the musical definition of a phrase in the 70s and 80s called Blue Eyed Soul. If you remember this song in Top Gun.
That's spectacular.
I mean, this is...
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, in terms of critical commentary, this song in Top Gun is a top 10 moment of all time. What have you got as to why we use this?
We're playing this song today. It hit number one for the first of a couple of weeks on this date in 1965. And in terms of how this song was created, Barry Mann, and I'm going to mispronounce her last name.
Cynthia Weil.
Cynthia Weil.
They were the other... when Carole King and Jerry Goffin, they were the rival and friend and all of that. They were brill-building writers.
And they were picked by Phil Spector. He said, yeah, I need you to write the song for these guys. So they sort of took off on Baby, I Need You, Loving. They said, oh, we'll write a ballad. And the line, You've Lost That Love and Feeling, was basically just a filler line. And said, we'll replace that later. And
oh, really?
And
what are they going to replace it with?
Phil
Scrambled
Spector came
eggs?
In and said, I like that.
Right.
And then Phil added the...
Phil,
you know, gone,
Phil doing gone. Phil not around yeah. anymore for us.
Yes, yeah, he's
in
Cell
prison.
Block 9, yes, I believe. Yes, he yeah. added the gone, 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 whoa, 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 which Cynthia did not like at all, and he said, "Well, tough because I'm riding with you."
Yes, I think that he was right.
Yes, and then that little in the bridge, which I'd never been sort of identified in my head. That's just Phil Spector saying, "Oh, let me figure this out," and doing a riff off of "Hang On, Sloopy."
Okay.
Which is what that bridge is. And apparently, Bobby Hatfield did not like any of this at all. And he said, you know, what am I supposed to do during medley solo here? And Spector replied, you can go directly to the bank because this is going to be a huge hit.
You can chop broccoli. What did Bill Medley do when you sang Unchained Melody?
Exactly.
What, he just stood there and then filed his nails? That's the way it goes.
Exactly.
That's the way it goes. Michael, you're back. You were.
I am back.
Trial. You were in a trial
back
for
more cash.
Yes. Days.
Uh-huh. 8 days, and it was not Hanukkah.
Well, yeah.
God. So my big lesson is when the judge is interviewing to see if you should be on this jury or not, if he gives you an out, you should take the out. So when the judge asks, will your role on the Tony Kornheiser Show influence your ability to be, you know, unbiased and fair in these proceedings? Yes, it will.
Yeah,
particularly after day eight.
Right. No. You said no.
I said no because I was trying to do my duty. And at that point, I figured, you know, the case would be 1 to 2 days in trial, deliberations probably half a day. This was my first experience with jury duty. No, I was going to be fair and impartial. And frankly, you know, when you look around, I actually do think that I was a good juror and that I was fair and approached the case with the necessary thoughtfulness. Mm-hmm. But I quickly learned that the real life courtroom and experience is not like TV, which is very fair to say. But overall, the court is an awkward, clumsy place. The judge has abrupt starts and stops to the proceedings, to testimonies, will cut off witnesses in the middle of their testimony for a break. For breaks. You're required to, you know, the courtroom shuts down for lunch at a very specific time. It's a full hour and 15-minute lunch, no questions asked. You have to stop proceedings at 4:45, so you have to stop earlier than that to get everybody out of the courtroom. The lawyers themselves sometimes feel like they're just fishing in open air for a question. I found it inappropriate that at sometimes the lawyers would basically say 2 to 3 conflicting questions and then end with a very simplified correct. And if whether it was the witnesses, the defendant, they don't actually know what they are answering to. And it's a way that the lawyers can really skate a fine line where it's just up to interpretation. I know that my experience was a little bit different than yours, Dad, where they let us take notes. They gave each of us a little steno
pad. We were not allowed to take notes.
And I found it to be incredibly distracting once we got into deliberations. You know, after one afternoon, after 2 days, people were so far removed from what actually happened on the stand and in the courtroom, and they were just relying on their notes. Mm-hmm. Even if we could go back and say, your notes was just your interpretations of somebody's thought in the moment. You were actually incorrect in writing something down. And in doing so, you were taken out of the moment. I was thinking about, you know, my experience in the classroom where you have a student who might be listening or doodling or doing something on a computer and is taken out of the moment and did not realize someone's facial expression might have showed you that they were being, you know, untruthful or that they were a little confused themselves.
So my trial was wonderful because it lasted one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had a judge say to you, this is a day and a half trial, and it ends up as 8.
Well, when he says that,
I mean, that's really a miss.
When he says that, it does not include deliberations, right, and it does not include the other business of the court. So he's answering other people's questions and, you know, preparing other cases, which I found to be distracting for him, for us. But I do think, you know, he opened up the proceedings. So to get to the end of this, we had to end with a hung jury because we had a few holdouts who basically said, I don't have enough proof unless I can see a video or unless I can believe the witnesses more fully. I will never be able to get over unreasonable doubt. And so the judge did concede that he had, you know, misread what he expected to be the timeline of the actual testimony in the trial.
The notion that you need a video is a very modern notion because everything is on cell phones somewhere.
Right, right.
In the real world, there's not video for everything.
Right.
And if someone, there maybe ought to be a question to potential jurors in voir dire. If we don't have any video, you know, how are you going to deal with this?
Right.
Right. Have you... You've been, mm-hmm, you're famous. You've been on juries?
Been on
how
one.
Many? I've been
one.
On one.
One.
And that was enough for me, one. Was mm-hmm. yours a long trial?
It was
I know your wife was just on one that I got out of.
It was 4 days, I think.
That's a little much.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't awful. It was 2 days of testimony and 2 days of deliberation. And it was funny that it wound up being much like, I thought it was much like the what you see in the movies and TV, you have these archetypes,
yes,
of people in the jury pool, and it really does work out that way, you know. And so that was interesting to me, but it wasn't as bad as Michael's.
Not to tell Michael to quit whining,
but well, you tell really me this every time you're on, so please continue.
I was on one once for weeks, as in 4 or 5 weeks.
Grand jury, or
it was a big daggone deal. It was an assault case, and we picked the foreman of a jury at the beginning, and we all, and it was unanimous, right? This guy was just, he was great, and we knew he was going to be the best one. We picked him, and over the course of the weeks when we were deliberating, he turned into Captain Queeg. He turned into a maniac,
and it got to... He was just stealing strawberries?
Yeah. And when it got to all of us against him, it was down to 11 to 1.
Wow.
Right? It was down to 11 to 1 and Lee day after day. And it was just like Law and Order. So we kept saying to the judge, we're not going to break this. No, no, keep working, keep working. So finally, a bunch of us just said, okay, we're going to write a note to the judge. And the courtroom was right off the little room where we were, right? And we're going to write a note to the judge saying, we are hopelessly deadlocked here. And we write the note, and the crazy foreman grabs the note and goes diving into the courtroom. And two or three people, two of them, my fellow jurors, tried to stop him. So there's fisticuffs going on in the door and banging. They go spilling into the courtroom where another trial was going on. God. And the judge appropriately declares a mistrial. We would have killed this guy if they had not escorted him out of the courtroom. We were so angry that we had devoted so much time. It was the summer of the Million Man March. We had devoted so much time to it, really seriously and really genuinely, and he screwed it up at the end. But it was multiple weeks.
Wow.
I kind of liked it.
You had, I think you're allowed to, I hope you're allowed to say this. If not, we'll get rid of it. But you had people leave the jury box because they had other things to do, right?
Yes. Yeah, so
you had a pregnant woman.
Other priorities. We had a very pregnant woman whose doctor basically said, you can't be on this jury after this date. We got to that date, so we had multiple alternates come in.
Why would you even let her on in the first place if she's that pregnant?
Exactly.
I don't really understand that.
We had to change.
She was 8.5 months pregnant the day they put her on.
We had to change our four person in the middle of the deliberations because we had to bring back, you know, an alternate. Then we had another juror member leave for a day, come back at the beginning of this week because he had a medical procedure.
Did you make any friends?
I did. It's like watching the
Bring
TV
them to
show.
Chatter.
I actually have invited some of my fellow jury members to Chatter.
Good.
And we can get you T-shirts, Juror 1.
I survived.
Juror
1.
Right, yeah, exactly. Sounds like the judge mismanaged his bullpen.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit. But it's amazing. It's like watching the TV show Survivor. You have alliances forming in real time.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, when you go on a bus or any, you know, table seating, everyone starts to sit in the same spot after day one. Mm-hmm. And then you have these nonverbal cues when other people are talking as to, like, who's going to respond. I want you to respond because I think you have more clout within the general room than I have. You can be the liaison to the other side. That part was fascinating. The human side was fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm glad you're back. I preface this. I wanted to do this thing on Justin Timberlake just briefly. I did not watch Justin Timberlake in real time.
No.
I saw a little of it yesterday because I walked the dog. It's halftime.
Right,
I have to get the dog out.
Right.
I walked the dog, took the dog out.
Mm-hmm.
Was Justin Timberlake good, bad, or? Eh?
I thought he was not good.
Not good.
Yeah.
Justin Timberlake.
Not as good as I hoped it to be. Right? As we were saying before the show, I thought it had a kind of 1970s Up With People feel to it.
Right.
Right? And I knew they had to do the Prince tribute, but I thought that was a little awkwardly slammed in there. So nowhere near as good as I hoped it to be.
Justin Timberlake?
I thought it was very safe. I think they were misguided in trying to have too many different venues for him to perform in, which I think just distracted from his ability to sing. It was a dance performance, and it was fine.
Yeah.
Nigel?
Well, I was watching it here at the restaurant, so I didn't really have sound on. I just was hoping that, you know, Paul Revere and the Raiders could have been the choice.
The guy in the post, Chris Richards, who kills people, kills Justin Timberlake, says, because I didn't realize that this was controversial. Oh. I mean, I understood the Prince thing was because Prince had said while he was alive,
don't
do this.
Yes.
And I don't think that was Justin Timberlake's decision, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
Chris Richards. Do you like me? That's the latent question throbbing at the center of every Justin Timberlake song, and suddenly the answer is no. His best pop songs always seem to radiate desire, but it turns out that his music is merely needy. And Sunday night, headlining a hyper-hyped Super Bowl halftime show, Justin Timberlake sounds needier than ever before. It's been a trying few days for JT. On Friday, he released Man of the Woods, the weakest and most savagely reviewed album of his career. On Saturday, rumors zipped across the American bandwidth he'd be performing inside Minneapolis's U.S. Bank Stadium alongside a hologram of the late Prince, a form of ghoulish duet that Prince himself once called demonic. So on a dark Sunday night, I got to get to the inside here.
Tony turns the page.
I'm not.
You don't seem to have good fingers.
So on a dark Sunday night in Minnesota, Timberlake tries to make the world forget about his dud album and about that alleged purple hologram and, about the last time he performed at the Super Bowl. way back in 2004 when he sang "Bet I'll Have You Naked" by the end of this song, then proceeded to rip away a significant portion of Janet Jackson's stage costume, exposing her right breast to 90 million unsuspecting television viewers. So he's killing the guy.
Yes.
He later says of his dancing, calls it android dancing.
Yeah.
He says Timberlake has decided to drape an isolated vocal track of "I Would Die for You" over the oozing chords of his 2006 ballad "Until the End of Time," and it feels more like taking than giving. Prince didn't die for Justin Timberlake, and he certainly didn't die for this. He kills this guy.
Yeah.
Was it that bad?
No. No. It was perfectly fine.
Meh. Why would you be surprised that someone who reviews something reviewed it and said, "I didn't like it," and "I didn't like it loud"? That's what they do. That's what reviewers do.
Chris Richard kills people.
But that piece sounds like it was written 4 hours before the Super Bowl even aired.
Yeah.
Sounds like he doesn't like him.
If you read what we were saying earlier, if you read what he said about rappers not cleaning up at the Grammys, he is very angry about something.
Yeah, almost really all the time. I think that makes for a good reviewer.
I think that's more about his sense of the new album and his sense of Justin Timberlake's involvement with that wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was tacky to sing the same song that got Janet Jackson booted at the beginning of your set.
Oh, is that what he did?
It's basically just like, ha, ha, ha.
And there's a line in the piece where it's, you know, Justin stops, looks in the camera, and is essentially giving you a knowing wink without doing it.
Yeah, I just thought that was tacky.
I thought it was funny.
I think they're running out of people who can do halftime shows.
Yeah.
That's true, because it's hard to find somebody that everybody likes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll get out of here.
Jason Fuse would be great.
Kristen Onstad. Oh, she could have done it. It was in Minnesota. She could have driven.
That would have been fantastic.
That's true.
All right, let's get out of here. And we have a problem with email. We don't have the internet.
Yes.
So we have like just a couple of emails.
Yes.
So don't worry about
it. We do have a jingle, which is about the never-ending trial.
Time to leave.
Yes.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Hanging around the courthouse, we sure don't see him here. He got that juror summons, and then Michael disappeared without Mike. When will he be back? Without Mike. No breakfast shows at Chatter, and no MeUndies flacks. Best tell Kate and Young Bootsy, guess he won't be coming back without Mike. Who sells the t-shirts? Nah, 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 nah.
We did a poor job of that.
Without Mike. Well, the prosecution rested, and the jury's just irate. Gotta get 12 guilties, Michael. Gonna send that perp upstate.
Fantastic. John Fitzpatrick about the D.C. court system, an old Doobie Brothers song.
Yes.
We have a very small... I'll explain this. Let me thank Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports for coming on with us. Thank Bill Isaacson for sitting in without any food. None of us had any food.
Audience of one.
Let me thank the sponsors, Blue Apron, Casper Mattresses, and Sherry's Berries. I did two of the reads. Be grateful. Michael's read was better than mine.
Two out of three Hall of Fame.
That's exactly right. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We don't have internet function today.
Yes.
So we could not print out email.
Right.
So we have two emails.
All right.
So we got to get out of here. So just
slow.
Get out of here.
All right.
Just hit the button that says we're out. Now I still can't even fill 60 seconds.
Try.
Dear Dr. Bootsy's grandpa, I'm writing to announce the arrival of the newest little emasculine child, Calvin Zachary, born in the wee hours of February 3rd, tipping the scales at 8 pounds and a half ounce, measuring 20 inches. His mother and I are quite fond of him. He's already looking forward to his first trip to Chatter. Bootsy's been twice already. When he's old enough to meet the bald orange man he's already heard so much about. That's from Bobby Gottfried. And Bobby, of course, had the baby shower in here in Chatter.
Congratulations.
Congratulations to the family. From Mark in Cape May, New Jersey. Yes, Tony. A nod to David.
Thank you.
Struggling with insomnia on Friday night, I landed on the NFL Network at 4:30 a.m., just in time to see a commercial for the Atomic Lighter. And from Michael in Scottsdale, mocha is to coffee as gopher is to groundhog. Information for life. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
But we don't have the chutzpah
to do it.
Wake up and wipe my eyes. I gotta get up, I don't know why. I don't wanna leave you now, but I'm giving it all for you, my baby. Coffee black and egg on toast. Why choose that? God only knows. This boss is chewing my tail, but I'm giving it all, giving it all for you. It's gonna be a beautiful day with you. Yeah, I know it's gonna be a beautiful day with you. Beautiful day, it's gonna be a beautiful day, Will. Get up and on the job, my mama ain't here and I'm alone. This life can't keep you down, but I'm giving it all for you, my baby. Running and running and running around, nothing can ever keep me down. Your smile is all I got, and I'm giving it all, I'm giving it all for you. It's gonna be a beautiful day with you. Yeah, I know it's gonna be a beautiful day with you. Yeah, I know it's gonna be a beautiful day, and I know it's gonna be a beautiful day, and a beautiful day, beautiful day. It's gonna be a beautiful day with you. Don't wanna leave you now, but I'm giving it all for you, my baby. Cause I'm running and running and running around, nothing can ever keep me down. Your smile is all I got, and I'm giving it all for you. Give it all. It's gonna be a beautiful day with you. Yeah, I know it's gonna be a beautiful day. Thank you.